Welcome to Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers. Every week, I'll be talking to different business people, artists, sports people, and other personalities about things that they've done in their life and things that they want to do. Join me and dig deep. Welcome to this week's Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Nathan Faruja, who you probably know is a bit of an extreme sports person, so has done plenty of things that definitely aren't on my bucket list. most famously, you did the one I remember most is the 27 marathons in 27 countries in 27 days, which, apart from logistically, must have been quite tough.
Well, I think logistically it was probably tougher than the running, trying to get from one country to another and be there at 7:30 every morning to meet the press and encourage the fundraising. Was quite daunting.
So the run was easy every day, a full marathon every day?
Well, if you prepare for it, as I said last time, we're designed to run as human beings. We used to run marathons every day to catch our dinner when we lived in caves. So, biologically, we are still the same as we were. We haven't evolved since then. We just have to walk to the fridge instead of chase an animal around for a marathon.
Yes, and there's only running to our fridge when there's something decent in there. So, yeah. And what other sort of things like that have you done that would be on somebody else's sort of bucket list, these challenges that you've done, things like swimming channels and...
Yeah. Well, I think, most people put things on their bucket list which are sort of time delayed. The idea is that I will do it one day when I have either the time or the money or the resources. Mm-hmm. And usually these are stretch goals. Some people will say, I'd love to run a marathon one day. And that's because of their perspective of what a marathon means to them, something that shows that they've achieved something that is exceptional based on what they think their physical abilities are at that particular point. So bucket list items tend to be things that are aspirational. And it depends on your starting point. If you've never run a marathon, then a marathon's a good one. Mm. If you've run many, then it becomes a bit more extreme. So run a marathon in a different condition. Run it in a desert or up a mountain or swim one.
Yeah, see, I've got a gene missing, I think. It just doesn't appeal to me. I want to run 5K and I'm finding training for that hard enough,
But again, it's all perspective. Some people can sit at their desk for 12 hours. For me, that's worse than running any marathon.
Mm. So that would be not a bucket list item, but something that would be the biggest challenge for you would be to sit still.
Yes.
And eat junk food? No?
No, I like junk food as long as it's small doses. Mm. The kick you get from junk food, the sugars and the salts are something that your body craves. So it's okay as long as you don't eat too much of it and you burn off what you are eating. Mm. But if I do eat too much of it, then you feel guilty, you feel bad. It's an all-round vicious cycle, so I want to stay away from that.
Ah. So what other things have you done that are sort of either sporting or otherwise that were on a bucket list from when you were younger? Because you've been doing these things for a long time. This isn't something that you just sort of did when you were 40. This is something that you've been doing as you've grown up, should I, for want of a better term.
Yes, I think the physical side of things have always been an exploration rather than a bucket list. They've always been sort of, I wonder if I could do that, or whether the human, human body could go through these sort of endurances. Mm-hmm. So it's always been driven by curiosity more than anything else. Obviously, the fundraising side and raising funds for causes I believe in was a good motivator and a good driver to explore and push the limits. And also encourage people to actually try and push their own limits, whether it is running a 5K or a 10K or taking it to the next level, running a marathon. When I talk about it, it's always nice to hear people say, from that perspective, then I think I'm going to try. And that approach for me has been fundamental in the way that I live my life in general, whether it's advising my kids on how to live their lives, how to choose their careers or whatever it is that they're thinking of doing in the future, to deciding on our next holiday, should it be something that's getting us out of our comfort zone rather than just sort of being comfortable and easy, to business changes. Do I grow my business? Do I jump ship? Do I start something new? Do I sell it and move on? What are the decisions we take from a day to day that challenge us and put us outside of our comfort zone? Because otherwise you get stuck in it and your brain just rusts.
But what do you think makes you like that? Because you're very determined and you don't sort of think, oh, I've done that, okay, now I can sit on the sofa. What makes you want to do the next thing out of your comfort zone every time? You're constantly pushing. Was there something, you know, in the way you were brought up? Is there something that's just, I don't know, inbuilt in you? Has something happened along the way? Did you see something? Or are you, because you're constantly striving for the next hardest thing.
Well, on one level, as I said earlier, it is a bit of curiosity, you know, how far can we push the boundaries? I think, you know, for a very young age, I lived with constraints because I was a very severely asthmatic child. And, you know, doctors would say, yo, you can't do PE lessons, you can't play sports, you know, sit on the side and watch. Mm. And my parents always pushed me and said, you know, try, keep your medication with you, and if you feel an asthma attack coming on, sort of sit by the side, but always push that limit, see how far you can go before something happens and you have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been sort of ingrained in me that sense of, you know, go as far as you can and then assess, see how things are and then push on to the next level. And, you know, mostly with injuries throughout my career, as a basketball player, it's always been like that. You know, you get hurt, or you lose a game or you do something wrong. You learn from that mistake and you say, okay, the most important thing is not to do the same mistake twice.
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn out of this and how can I grow?
Okay, I should need to learn that one when I'm buying uncomfortable shoes. Not to buy another pair. But also, you headed up Inspire for many years, and, you know, I'm not going to say it was comfortable by any means because it was a challenging job, but you could have stayed there and carried on. But instead, you decided to, you know, change, start your own thing, and actually now you're motivating other people to do their thing and, you know, improve themselves. How does that work on a daily basis? Do you find motivation every day to help people, or is it frustrating when you find people who just can't?
Motivation is very personal. There are extrinsic motivators that people can put there, like money and lifestyle and bonuses and sticks, which is, you know, the fear of failure or the fear of getting out of your comfort zone. And so these do drive behavior, but the main ones are the intrinsic motivators, the reasons why we get up in the morning. And these are very, very personal. So it's about getting people to be self-aware about what that might be and question it, that allows them to then realize really what is the driver for their sense of exploration and getting out there and trying new things. You know, working with an organization like Inspire is very gratifying because you can really see the fruit of your hard work and the work of the team around me. And having a direct influence on quality of life of people with disabilities is very satisfying. And that is a deep intrinsic motivator.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others. And after 5 years at Inspire, I felt that one of my motivators, which is growth and growing a business, even if it is a non-profit one, had sort of slowed down a bit because, you know, we were of a size that was reaching the needs of pretty much the whole country. And so therefore I wanted to do something new. So again, the sense of never sitting still has always been there, but it doesn't mean, I don't think it's a negative thing.
No, not at all. No, it's more of a, you know, from going from a comfort zone to then continually trying. It's not just like, oh yeah, I've climbed Mount Everest, I can sit still now. You would think, oh well, I'll do it backwards.
Yeah. But most people who do things like that would think that way.
Mm.
You know, there's a great TED talk about, you know, sort of one of the analogies about motivation is about climbing a mountain. And you read a book about anyone who's climbed a mountain. If it's 300 pages long, it's 299 pages of pain and discomfort and frostbite and aches and blisters and negative thoughts.
Mm.
And then one page of brilliant, great, the view is amazing, let's go do it again.
Mm-hmm. So if they could put that feeling in a tablet, would you not just take the tablet? No.
I think it would lose its value.
Mm.
There's a lot of philosophy about the reward only being as valuable as the effort put in.
Okay.
And therefore, you know, if you had everything easy, then you don't have a sense of accomplishment. So it's a bit deflating.
Mm. A bit like online shopping versus real shopping. I'm sorry, I'm very Perhaps. Shallow in comparison to you. But I'm just sort of putting it into context for hopefully half the listeners.
But shopping is an interesting thing. Much to the dismay of my mates and my wife, I like shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sense of accomplishment when you found something that fits and matches and meets your expectations. But it's all about what was your expectation in the first place? was it the price you wanted to pay, what you perceive as value, whether you wanted to splash out and feel good about spending some money on yourself. There's a lot of psychology behind why people buy stuff. And if you understand how that works, then you can, you know, get a lot out of shopping or whatever it is you're doing, because it's again, personal to you.
And is that what you do with your relatively new business now? Is that you're finding what motivates people and getting them to tap in and actually get them to improve themselves on a professional level and also on a personal level? Is that what the Level Up does?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, we in modern day business, we can't distinguish between what is personal and business.
Okay.
You know, the idea of this work-life balance tug of war is just ridiculous. I mean, we need to look at life as one thing, and everything has to fit in it. So I coach CEOs. That's my main job. And when I coach CEOs, I really look at what it is they're doing on a day-to-day basis that actually is hampering their performance. And often it's bad habits. Often it's not understanding the potential they have that needs to be unlocked, and giving them a sense of control that they can actually make the changes they need to make in order to enhance performance that's pretty much already there, or use it more effectively. Mm-hmm. And that performance may be intellect. It may be intellectual property. It may be a great team they've got. It may be resources. It may be market share. Whatever it is, it's about maximizing the value of your strengths rather than just keep worrying about the weaknesses.
Ah, okay. And some of them you motivate even to do stuff in their private lives to, you know, make them more energetic, whatever. I've spoken to a couple of people on this show who you've worked with, who have gone off and run marathons and, you know, done crazy bike rides and things as part of a sort of a side effect of having met you. And I'm not going to be doing it.
I think it's you know, hopefully I've instilled a sense of curiosity about their potential, and they want to go out and test it. And what that does is it creates a self-fulfilling feedback loop where you go back, you look back and you go, oh, I never thought I could do that, and I have. What else is there out there that I think I can't do that I should attempt?
Okay.
And that then reflects into, you know, every aspect of life. I've had people come after, you know, a physical challenge, come back and say, well, I've done it physically, now can I don't know, can I sell my business? Can I grow my business? Can I delegate my business and start balancing my life a bit more effectively? And so it's anything that requires change has to counter fear, and fear is the strongest human emotion. So getting past fear, whether it's physical discomfort or emotional, standing up on stage and giving a speech elicits the same fear as, you know, jumping out of a plane with a parachute strapped to your back in some people. So try the parachute first and then go
and
up
then
on stage.
Right.
Yeah, if that's how it works, then that's what you do.
So is there anything you're scared of? Is there anything that gives you fear that you've yet to conquer?
I wouldn't say. Look, fear has different gradients. You know, there's from the little anxieties to the more sort of bigger frustrations to the scariness of most fear stuff. So we all have some level of anxiety, whether it's, you know, the stability of my income and meeting the family needs that creates some anxiety if you have a bad month, to other things which are more absolute, like fear of heights. I'm afraid of heights.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But that for me is it's an instinct. So therefore, I ignore it. You know, I'm happy to jump out of a plane with a parachute strapped to my back because I know that fear is irrational. It's just, you know, it's just there because it's a survival instinct. And so understanding what those fears are and where you sit on that gradient is very important, because otherwise you can just get hijacked by fear and not do stuff just because.
Yeah, be paralyzed.
Yeah, exactly, paralyzed.
Okay. And so, but having done lots of what I would say are insane things, you know, and the sporty side, are there other things that you've achieved in your life till now that you would have seen as like, yeah, big tick for me, I achieved that and I'm proud of myself for having done that? What things have you done?
Oh, plenty. I mean, like I said, when I was younger, it was, you know, being able to do sports just because of the asthma. So that was great. I remember the first time I ran, you know, a 10K without having to take my Ventolin was a real sense of achievement. You know, settling down and having kids. You know, when, in my early days, I was a bit of a wild, you know, guy that wanted to do adventurous stuff all the time, and you know, saw family perhaps as something I would do much, much later in life. And actually, you know, having a loving family, a wife and two great kids is is great. I mean, and looking back, I think it's one of my biggest accomplishments to a certain extent, mm-hmm. of actually going away from the carefree sort of side of me and actually becoming sensible. It doesn't take away from me doing crazy things and being adventurous and actually now doing them with my wife and kids.
Yes, I was going to say they're all a bit.
So, you know, it's not that compromised. I remember kids with friends would say, "Oh, your life's really going to change now you've got kids." Not really.
No, they're always at the finish line, aren't they? So it's, you know, even more incentive to get to the end, I think.
Yes, you know, and you know, trying to instill a sense of adventure in them, I know will help them grow and be successful in their own lives.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, independence.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And also saying, you know, saying no to some stuff. You know, as you know, some of our, you know, both our kids are very sporty and they're gifted naturally, but they don't necessarily do athletics or triathlons. They prefer dance, mm-hmm. and gymnastics, and that's fine. Mm. You know, they're living to what their choices are. They have a good balance of physical activity and, you know, the studying and the exams and whatever else they have to do to build their career. And that sense of balance is very, very important.
And so what's next on your bucket list, whether it be the sort of sporty side of things or business side of things or just personal random, you know, what things could you want to do if you, you know, if you had no time, no money, no anything else restraints, what would be on your bucket list?
I think the biggest constraint for me at the moment is time. So if I had the luxury of you know, 48-hour days, it would be more travel. Mm-hmm. There's a few places in the world that I'd like to go to and experience.
What sorts of places? What are you into?
Culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love to spend some time in the Orient and Japan and China and places like that, just to understand how people think there.
Okay.
It's a bit of a strange description, perhaps, but... And then also the wilderness of places like Patagonia and South America, where, you know, it's a completely different topography and completely different way of living. You know, the little experience we had when we went to Nepal and lived in the hillsides in these little villages, living with these villagers, was a real eye-opener for me and for my kids. And I'd like to be able to experience more of that.
Mm-hmm. I just take time out and ditch the mobile phones and,
yeah
live life at that different pace.
Yes.
Yeah.
And explore.
Uh-huh.
But I don't have this sense that, oh, I need to get off my phone or I need a holiday. My life is so well balanced that, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's very well balanced. So I get to do a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. that most people would have to wait to do. You know, the program is the bucket list. I feel that most bucket lists are written for things to do in 10, 20 years' time. Mm. Whereas I like to fill the bucket now, you know, and try and do stuff now if I can.
So what's in your bucket at the moment? Let's go.
I have four buckets.
Okay. Tell me about bucket number one.
So the first bucket is flow. So stuff that excites me. Mm-hmm. So that bucket needs to be filled regularly. Mm-hmm. And it could be something as simple like we're at the beach, there's a high place to jump off and I'll climb up and I'll jump off, mm-hmm. and just get that sense of exhilaration. That for me is part of this bucket. And it could be anything from, you know, getting up in front of a crowd and giving a keynote or a speech or getting on the roller coaster for a holiday, whatever makes the, you know, the blood rush and the adrenaline pump. Mm-hmm. So that's one bucket. The second bucket is impact. What am I doing that's making a difference to other people? That could be my family, could be my friends, could be my community, it could be charity work, volunteering. I need to have a sense somehow that I'm doing something that's making a difference to someone else. So that's my second bucket. The third bucket is roles and responsibilities. And that's really about looking at what I'm doing and wearing the hats I'm wearing and being the best I can be at that particular role. Mm-hmm. So if I am spending time with my kids on holiday, I am there 100% being a dad, mm-hmm. Rather than half my mind's on work and half my mind's on the kids. So really paying attention to being the right role and the role model that I aspire to be in whatever circumstance. And the fourth bucket is excellence. And it's about learning. It's about learning something new, every day if I can, trying new things, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's picking up a guitar and trying to learn how to play, because I'm completely tone deaf, so makes it even more difficult.
It's something you can't do.
Yeah, and the more, you know, try and learn a language or learn a few, mm-hmm. few phrases before I go to a place I'm traveling to. Just, you know, always trying to learn something new.
literally learn something new every day is a good one. Yeah. So what's in those four buckets at the moment? If you've got things that like next weekend or the weekend after you're planning in those in the flow, is there one big thing that's coming up that you're preparing for?
I did a couple of challenges just this summer, which sort of pushed me out of my comfort zone physically and mentally. So those sort of filled that bucket for a while.
Wife says few.
so that, you know, that's quite a full bucket at the moment. I think, in fact, I've slowed down a little bit. I was doing a charity event every year. Now I haven't had much of the time with the new business, but I've tried to keep certain roles. I chair the Volunteer Organization Council, so we meet regularly and help develop the sector that way. So I'm giving my time to that. I've got a friend of mine who wants to raise some money for a school in Ethiopia, so I'm meeting him exactly after this chat to see how I can help him reach that goal. So, you know, trying to stay aware of opportunities for me to make an impact and help people in that sense. I think roles and responsibilities, it's now become more of saying no, making sure that the ones I am actually saying yes to, I do well, rather than bite off more than I can chew and be mediocre at them, choose fewer and be better. And I think excellence is something I do, you know, learning is something I do every day. I'm listening to audiobooks whenever I'm running, so I'm always learning. I read at least a book a week on various subjects.
Okay.
So I'm very keen to keep learning. I've got a thirst for, you know, cool stuff and interesting stuff. Not just from the, not from the sports perspective, but mostly from the mindset perspective.
Okay. You
know, what are people doing differently that makes them successful? And how people think differently that makes them successful.
So are there a couple of tips you can give us on how to unlock our own potential and motivators? Because, you know, some of us aren't honest with ourselves. We sort of think we want to be something, we imagine we're something, but actually we're really not. So how, are there sort of some basic tips you can give us to identify our motivators potentially to make us fill our own buckets?
Yeah, well, you know what, I think this program is quite cool, because one of the biggest things that people don't do is set big goals, big audacious goals. And if you want to be motivated, you have to have a purpose. And if you can figure out how that goal means or reflects purpose, that's going to be much more powerful. If it's like, you know, yeah, I'd like to travel the world. Fine.
Yeah.
That's a nice bucket list item, but what does it mean? And if it means that you've achieved financial freedom, you've achieved a sense where you can go off and your kids are sorted and they can help manage themselves, which means it shows your parenthood has been good. If it means that you are able to use technology to be able to access, you know, your friends and social, whatever it means in reality, if you can figure out what that is, then it makes much more sense. So if you do have a bucket list, figure out what the purpose of that bucket list. And that's the first step. So purpose is the most important thing. Start with why. Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to put that bucket list item on there? Then it's about breaking it down into mini goals. Because we function by, our motivation is driven by dopamine, okay, which is the feel good of success. If the goal is too far away, we lose momentum. We just say, oh, I'll get to it someday. And therefore we slow down. Whereas if you're doing things towards it, so if it is a, you know, a world cruise, maybe one of the aspects of it is the budget, it's about creating milestones of savings, which says, oh, look, I'm one step closer. I've raised so much money. I've put so much money aside. And those micro goals allow you to feel that you're progressing towards it and keeps the momentum going. So that's a second one. I think the third one is allowing for you to deviate from the plan, which includes making mistakes or slowing things down a little bit, so we don't have the guilt feeling that this bucket list we're not achieving is grinding us down and saying, look, see, I keep failing. Look, I haven't managed to achieve. I said I was going to do this by this age, and I'm really feeling bad about myself because I haven't. You know, let yourself some flexibility, because the last thing you want is to be feeling guilty about that goal rather than it being aspirational and you wanting to go towards it. And it becomes something that just haunts you rather than is something that is driving you. So I think, you know, on those, you know, just top of my head, those three things would probably help us understand how to get closer to those big goals.
I think you said about breaking it down into mini goals is actually quite smart, because you do think, oh, when I'm 50, I'm going to do that, and that's what I'm working on now. When I'm 50, I'm going to be doing those things, and actually, to split them down into bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, exactly.
So they don't seem to be quite so challenging. And have you ever actually wanted really to do something and then you've got to it and it's like, meh, you know, that it wasn't quite as like, yay, as you thought it was going to be, you're just, okay, did that. And it sort of, you just thought, oh, what a waste. Has that ever happened to you at all?
Well, yes, in a way quite often, simply because my enjoyment comes mostly from the journey rather than than the destination. So even running 27 marathons, after it, I was like, okay, done that, you know. But it's because the whole challenge for me was getting the logistics right and getting to the start line and being able to progress, you know. At marathon 26, you know you're going to do 27, so you don't have that sense of elation.
Apparently, you actually got faster and faster as you went through the marathon, which is annoying.
I said, let's get it over and done with quicker.
I know how that feels now. I know that's mile 13 or whatever. So that was one of those.
It was great, and we raised lots of money for charity. But that sense that, you know, every day you're moving towards the goal often gives you a sense that when you get to it, you know, if you're 99% there, you know you're going to get to 100, unless it's something that you do that is instantaneous. So, you know, if you are jumping out of a plane with a parachute as part of your bucket list, that's an instantaneous thing, and that you can have that buzz when you hit the ground and go, yeah, I did it. But if it's something that's a journey, that's a progression, then you tend to get less of the finish sort of wow.
So you should actually see the whole journey as part of the
absolutely.
The success factor, not just the actual, I did it. I bought the perfect shoes.
Yes.
Running shoes in your case.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be things like, you know, passing an exam. You know, most people, you get the grade and, you know, you feel great. But in reality, if you did do all the work and you did put all the hard work in and the studying, etc., you should expect to have a good grade.
Yeah, it's a relief rather than actually a yay.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I'm just heading for my results now, so fingers crossed for me. Well, my bucket list is to pass my master's. But anyway, thank you so much, Nathan Farrugia, for talking to me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Bucket List. Thank you for joining me and my guest on this week's Bucket List. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Grec, the engineers for this programme.